When our best fur friends leave our world, many of us are left wanting one last scritch, one last hug, one last walk together. One Last Network is a space for pet guardians to honor their pets in their senior years and to cope with the days leading up to and after their passing. Here's your host, Angela Schneider, founder of One Last Network and Big White Dog Photography in Spokane, Washington.
Are we doing better? And can we do better yet? These are the questions I had for Dr. Danny McVetti, the co-founder of Lap of Love Veterinary Hospice and In-Home Euthanasia with Dr. Mary Gardner. Lap of Love is a national network of veterinary doctors who offer hospice care and peaceful euthanasia in the comfort of a pet's home. When Danny was prepping a family for a euthanasia one night at the emergency clinic where she was working shortly after graduating from veterinary school, her client said, "Please, can you leave her on my lap? I don't want her on that cold, sterile table. I want her right here with me." That wasn't clinic policy, though. Danny said yes. And it was at that moment she knew that's what every pet deserves, to be in the place where they are most comfortable, their guardian's lap. Lap of Love was born, and now 15 years later, Danny and her co-founder are advocates for ways the veterinary world can improve the euthanasia process for pets and their families. After all, the word euthanasia is Greek for you, or easy, and thanatos, or death. Easy death. Let's find out what that really means. Hi, good morning, Danny McVetti. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, it's a great day. Why don't we get started by having you tell us a little, just a little, about your journey from Danny McVetti to CEO of a national network for hospice and end-of-life veterinarians.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so you want just a little story. All right, so I graduated the College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Florida in 2009. And as most of us can recall, the economy was collapsing then. You know, it looked very different. And I remember when I went straight into veterinary, into emergency medicine, and people were just, I mean, people came in having not been to the veterinarian in many, you know, in quite a long time because they couldn't afford it. So as 2009 kind of crept through, I realized for a myriad of reasons, this is the short version, that I was very good at euthanasia. I just found that I was able to be calm. I took a lot of pride in the entire process. And I think it's important to understand too, that 15 years ago when I graduated, we didn't receive any euthanasia education. Euthanasia was what just simply happened when our medical knowledge ran out, or when we had nothing else, or when the pet was going to die anyway. You know, that was just simply something, it was always respected, but it was never just educated. So I began taking it under my wing just to make the experience good, you know, sedation of the pet beforehand, really taking the time with the family, maybe giving them a paw print afterwards. And, you know, it went from just me doing it in the clinic to me offering to come to somebody's home. And, you know, a lot of times in emergency medicine, people will come in with an elderly pet that has not been to the veterinarian in quite a long time. And they'll say something like, "I know he's dying. I know he's not doing good. I don't want to spend a lot of money that I don't have. Can I just keep him comfortable until tomorrow or until next week when my wife or my husband get home," or something like that. So that was a great opportunity for me to introduce the word hospice into veterinary medicine. And I had volunteered for human hospice when I was in college. So I knew kind of just how, like, the philosophy of hospice care in general, which is just comfort over cure, right? That's just the basics of hospice care. And so when I would say that to somebody, "Oh, well, yeah, we'll just go in hospice care. Then we're going to have heavy pain management. I'll talk to you about what's going to happen, yada, yada." And then I would go to their house in a few days to euthanize. So, you know, and again, I just want to give a shout out to my boss, Dr. Katie Meyer. She was amazing. And she really taught me and allowed me to focus on medicine that put the patient first. So anyway, I started Lap of Love Veterinary Hospice. I was about 3 months out of school when I started it. I thought it was just going to be a part-time job that was going to help me pay back student loans. And here we are 15 years later, and it went from just me in Tampa, Florida, to now, We have over 300 doctors, we have over 600 employees total, and we help euthanize over 11,000 animals a month nationwide.
Wow.
So it's just, I think the coolest thing is that this wasn't a job that just I loved, because it sounds really weird, you're euthanizing pets. But it's, and I tell the doctors, I'm like, I think this thing that surprises me the most is that there's other weird doctors like me, that just take a lot of pride in it, and there's a lot of fulfillment that comes from it. And it's not this like sad thing that everybody thinks it is. It's sad, obviously, but it's also incredibly rewarding. And when you have the right personality, which is not for everybody, but when you have the right personality, it's in, just incredibly a fulfilling position to be in, to help families every single day. And they thank you for it. It's an emphatic thank you for everything that we do.
Do you consider it more of a transitionary process than an end-of-life process?
You mean the actual death process?
Yeah.
It's something that, having just attended over, a couple thousand euthanasias, it's something that it is so personal for each person that I wouldn't even want to comment on it, because I have such respect for all different views and things that people go through. And I think it's so important that they go through that on their own without even having my input. There are some things that I have felt in my heart through my life's journey. And so I feel like I can comment, when it's appropriate for families, and I'll bring my experience in when it's something that I know is going to serve them. But if it's something that either they just need to have on their own, or they have their completely own thoughts, I just, after being there with thousands of people, everyone's got their own opinion on what happens, right? Everyone. And all I can say is what Mark Twain says, which is, if they don't go to heaven, I want to go where they go, right?
That's right.
So.
Yeah. We talked a bit off camera about it, but I come from a time in a place where a bullet was cheaper than a needle. I know there's still that opinion out there in a lot of ways today. And then I became a pet guardian myself. And in 2014, it came time for me to say goodbye. And the experience was horrific.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It shouldn't have come out of the blue, but it did. I wasn't paying attention to the signs, but then again, you don't know what you don't know. And so we had to, I was called by the vet that morning to say, it's time. His heart is exploding. You have to put him down. And we had a clinic do that, and it was on the floor of a cold examination room. And then 2 days later, we went to pick up the ashes, and I was presented with a box that had a piece of paper stuck in it that was just a shitty little printout of that stupid Rainbow Bridge poem, attached with an elastic band. And I'm just at the counter, and this other young couple is picking up their dog from whatever experience they're having, and it's joy, joy, happy, happy, and I'm standing there holding my dog in a box. Are we doing better today?
I think all in all, we're doing better, maybe. But I think it's so pocketed. And even if we are doing better, it doesn't mean that we're always doing better. And that doesn't mean that even if one little time something gets screwed up, or the person that handed you the urn was having a bad day themselves, right? And now all of a sudden that just starts to domino effect down. And it's, The story of the bullet is an interesting one because my husband's from small town Iowa, very small town. Like people in Iowa don't always even know where Harlan, Iowa is. And when he found out what I did for a living, he's like, "People pay you for that?" That was, I'll never forget his first comment. "People pay you for that?" I'm like, "Yes, they pay me for that." But and even now, sometimes we have people that will call and out of anger and frustration because we're either, too expensive or because we live or they live somewhere where we can't get a doctor to them. They might say something to us like, "What am I supposed to do? Just put a bullet in his head." And, I always talk with my team about the fact that we actually have to have a lot of compassion for people when they say that because it's coming out of this desire to do something for their animal. And watching your pet in pain is very, very difficult. And that's why, up until a few generations or a couple generations ago, Old Yeller, right? The story of Old Yeller was one of the saddest things in the world because what did the dad have to do? He has to take it behind the barn and shoot it, right? The dog. So, it's something that is part of the history of humanity. And the history of the relationship between dog and human, goes back even further than that. So I think we're getting somewhat better at honoring the bond. And look, we have specialists now for animals. Like we have these amazing things for animals. But we also can't forget that animals, and now certainly we have a different relationship with dogs than we do, wild animals on the Serengeti, but the majority of the animals on the face of this earth, and in fact, the vast majority of humans on the face of this earth, die without euthanasia. They die without this instrument of death that we provide via euthanasia. So even though I think that euthanasia is the most beautiful, wonderful, incredible gift that we can possibly give at the right time, just because we don't have euthanasia, or because your pet has passed naturally, or because you've come home and find that he's passed away on his own, doesn't mean that that's a bad thing either. The majority of animals on the, Serengeti get torn apart by a lion, right? Or maybe not the majority, but many of them do. So the death process is always going to be something that is that we feel as humans we can do better at, but I have five human children. The birthing process ain't that much better. It's awful
Awful.
and it is very painful. And at the end, it's over, and then there's a prize at the end. And we don't know what that prize is on the other side necessarily of death. But the point is that coming into this world is not painless. Going out of this world may not be painless all the time. And in either way, I think it's particularly being a veterinarian, it's important to honor that journey people have and then and to just simply do my best at the best time. And that's it. And sometimes there's people we can't get to. There's sometimes when people think that they have to take it into their own hands. And if there are if they care enough to ask the question, then they care enough. It's one of those things that we talk about it in our team. And just trying to, again, helping people in whatever capacity we can help them in, and the pet obviously as well.
I want to say there's a movement to more normalize the death experience of pets, whether that's born from pure caring for the animals and humans or straight up capitalism. I'm not sure, but. Can we do better still?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, where the normalization comes from is the is try and get away from it's just a dog, it's just a cat. And I do think we've done as a society so, I mean, leaps and bounds ahead of where we used to be. People now, the majority of people now understand that you can have a bond with your animal that even far exceeds the bond that potentially you've ever had with any human ever. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, and I mean on a regular basis, people will say to us veterinarians during the euthanasia, "This was harder than the death of my dad. This was harder than the death of my mom. This was harder than," and it's not that it's more important to you. It's that it's a different kind of loss, right? Like it's ripping away something that was there for you unconditionally, never asked anything of you other than to have breakfast and dinner, right? And you know, just like we just have this different and not, again, not deeper. It's kind of like saying, you know, you don't love one kid more than the other. They're just different. Like they pull on different heartstrings. So I do believe that that has been normalized quite a bit, thanks to TV shows and books and stories and news and, you know, the ability for us to share on Facebook. Like, I don't know if it's just what I like and click on, but every single day there's like five people in my life that are losing animals. I'm like, oh my gosh, the algorithm just points it out to me or whatever. I don't know. But we have the ability to share these losses so openly now. And I do think that that's one of the benefits that's come out is that we can just normalize. Like when you lose your pet, it's just people get it. Like they understand, you know, they reach out, they say things. And that we've gotten a lot better at. I can tell you medically, we've gotten a lot better probably in the last 15 years. And I would like to think that it's a little bit of, you know, a wave that probably, hopefully, we started, you know, that has normalized the process of euthanasia in the veterinary field. For example, when I first started, pre-euthanasia sedation was not always done. There were some doctors around the country that had been doing it for many, many years, but it was not something I was taught. It was not something that we talked about. It was something that even sometimes today, the client is still charged extra for. And even worse is when the veterinarian will say, "Do you want me to sedate beforehand?" So to me, like I, as a veterinarian, I want to give the client and the pet the best experience possible. Now, I will say that medically, pre-euthanasia sedation is not necessary. So medically, the actual drug that we deliver that's euthanasia, so that pink juice or purple or blue, whatever it is, that is an overdose of sodium pentobarbital. So giving an injection, typically in the vein, of that is an overdose of sedation anyway. So, however, the pre-euthanasia sedation, what that does is that gives the family and the pet, I do think that it's nice for the pet, just this one step before that allows everyone to have a moment of calmness, a moment of quietness. You know, we jokingly call it sedation of the owner, you know, secondary sedation of the owner, because it just allows everything to, like, you see your pet calm and comfortable, you see them relax, you see them calm down, and you get this like last vision of your pet calm and comfortable and yet still alive. And then you give that second sedation or second injection, the euthanasia solution. Now, if you want to get one step further, the first injection is given in the muscle or under the skin. And it's typically like it requires less restraint. And then the second injection is given in the vein, which goes directly into the vein, which is then causes, you know, immediate sedation and then euthanasia. So it is nice to have a sedation injection that's easy to give, and then you don't necessarily have to restrain the dog for this final injection. So there's a couple different reasons why we do it, but I really like to think that that's become much more normal now. Maybe it's gone from 25% of people would do it 20 years ago to, you know, ideally 75 to 80% of doctors do it now. So we've made strides and we'll continue to make strides. And even look, we've got, you know, online pet loss grief support. We have an entire department dedicated to this. We have three or four full-time people dedicated to nothing but pet loss support. So I think we're getting better. Lots to go, right?
And the experience really does depend on where you are and what clinic you land at, right? Because I can remember as far back as taking Shep to his chiropractor in Calgary, Alberta, and they had a comfort room. Then fast forward a few years to the experience that we had at his end of life. And the clinic we go to today for Bella has a candle. And I'm not prepared to think about what the experience beyond that candle is like, because she only turns 10 in a couple of weeks. I'm hopeful that we have a few more years left. But how do we, is there a way to make it more consistent other than letting people know they could call Lap of Love?
It's one of the things that myself and my now business partner spend so much time on, which is lecturing to veterinarians. And we have been at all the major conferences. We've spoken for 10 years at the Veterinary Medical Conference. It's in Orlando every January. It's the largest veterinary conference in the world. And we do everything that we can to get the word out, and that's something that we have never. I remember at the very beginning, I had a couple of business associates that were saying, like, you're giving away your secret sauce. Why are you telling everybody else how to do this? And I remember, I'm like, this isn't just about us. This is about the whole profession. And this is about making it as beautiful as it can possibly be. And we don't do this for business. We do it because we love it and we want to share everything that we've learned. So I can definitely tell you that after, it's been 13 years now of lecturing, that I absolutely have people come up to me and say, you changed the way that we do things. You've changed the way that we focus on things. You've changed. So that is the, to me, that's the payoff for all of the time and energy that it takes to do some of that stuff. And it definitely, we're very blessed, my business partner and I, that when we start talking, it typically goes really well. I think we talked earlier about people in the pet space, and there aren't always going to be a lot of outgoing people, but my business partner and I, we're very outgoing. She, you're not going to believe this, but she's even more outgoing than me. She's just an
on.
incredibly dynamic human being, and she's hilarious. And, she makes the end of life care process, quality of life is one of her best conversations that she has, or one of her best lectures. And we do what we can to make it uplifting, and people laugh at our lectures, and just trying to bring a little bit of sparkle to something that we typically just have behind a closed door. And by sparkle, I mean like catching that little smile somebody has as they're telling you the story with tears in their eyes about their how crazy their dog was when he was a puppy, And just catching those little moments and kind of digging a little bit and just getting them to open up and, doing something so beautiful, holding such a beautiful ceremony for them that it's like, oh my gosh, I could never have imagined it would be like this. Thank you so much. This was so much better than it could be, or so much better than it's been the last 10 times, or, whatever. And to me, that just leaves people with, just leaves you with your grief, which is what life is about anyway. You just have that. But what you don't have is guilt, and you don't have this ongoing, this was a terrible drive to the clinic. It was a terrible drive home. And every time I pass that road, I'm going to think about where I left my pet, and just little stuff like that, that it, when we do it at home, it just makes it just a little less awful, just a little less bad. And sure, there are people that are like, I can never do it at home because I can never walk past my couch knowing that he died there. And yeah, you're right. There's always going to be something, but at the same time, your pet was in the most comfortable place he could possibly be. And the only thing that he could ever think was that, that happened was a tiny little injection underneath the skin, just like a vaccine injection. And then they drift off to sleep, and it's a better passing than any of us are going to get. N almost none of us, unless you want to go back to California or, Canada, actually California and Washington both have
Yep,
bills
we
that
have
have
it.
been passed. Yeah. Unless you want to go back there, we don't have that in the United States. But I'll tell you what Canada does have. It's Canada has the ability for a physician to administer the euthanasia solution. And I was talking to a retired doctor down here in Florida who is very, very big in his lobbying effort. And she said that over 90% of the people that elect for euthanasia in Canada, over 90% of them have the physician give the euthanasia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't
That's a
that
big
fascinating?
responsibility.
Yeah, huge. Trust me, I know a little bit. I guess I don't know the entire thing, right? But yeah, I mean, it's and it's it, it, but I can tell you what we're able to do with pets. Is that we are able to provide an experience for the people that love the pets that's unparalleled. I mean, I've given euthanasia solution on the beach at sunset after the people had an amazing day with their dog and took them around in a wagon everywhere. I've given euthanasia solution while the entire family, holds hands in prayer around the pet. and saying goodbye, candles lit. Like, I mean, you name it, I've done it. And what that leaves is it leaves the people there, like, with this immense sense of pride that they were able to give their pet something better than they will ever have themselves. So it's a beautiful thing, and it's something that again, it's unparalleled in what we're able to do and be a part of.
As society changes the way we look at pets, instead of being just a dog, the related pet industries have to change as well, don't they?
And I think in a lot of ways they're trying to get on the wave. There's GPS markers for our dogs now, right? Like there's
There's
all these
professional photographers.
professional pet photographers. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Like they do nothing but just the animals. I mean, they're, all these things and to your, to the statement that you said earlier, is it capitalism or is it a society that's getting smarter and deeper and more feeling and thinking? I don't know. Right, I have no idea. I can tell you that it's probably as simple as asking the person that's doing it. I never got in this for the money. I mean, I had to make money in order to pay back my student loans, right? Like government won't take my thank you cards as payment, for my student loans. But every step therein after has always been do the right thing and the finances will be there. Just do the right thing. And even now, there are 1,000 reasons, why we do what we do. And money is not at the top of that. We have, like, it has to make money so that we can continue to help people. And when one of the things that does break my heart is that we are more expensive than a clinic, but it's because we have a doctor that's dedicated minimum 2 to 3 hours for every family. And our doctors can only physically see 4 to 5 families in a day. Now, the average doctor with us sees 2.5 patients per day. So, in that amount of time, we have to be able to generate enough revenue to pay the doctor, and the doctors have to generate enough revenue to pay their student loans plus their, living expenses. And it just kind of goes on down the line. But so the economics of what we do is very, very different than the economics of a euthanasia in a clinic. Clinic euthanasia is going to cost anywhere from $75 to maybe $200, $250 at an emergency practice, but we're going to be an average of $200 to $300. So, it is, it just, it's, it takes a little bit more, but
Well,
it's a
but
way
and
that
let's be honest too, like vet clinics aren't always the most lucrative business to be in.
oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yes. Especially considering, you might be have 30 years in the business and you might still be paying off your student loans. And you've got all this overhead of having a building to pay for and staff and whatnot. It costs money to make changes
Yeah.
to further accommodate pet guardians for the transitionary phase, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, it just costs money. I mean, we're not in a world yet where insurance is covering everything. I think we might get there, or Europe is far ahead of us with pet insurance. The majority of people actually have it, but I can tell you it'd be very, very difficult. We don't, as veterinary field, we don't want the pet insurance to turn into what human insurance is. I don't want an insurance company telling me how to practice medicine. I went to veterinary school. I am the one who can look at a textbook and find out the latest and greatest and study data and make that applicable to my patient. No, I don't want an insurance company doing that. So it is, it just is the way that it is. And it's what's sad is that people love to bash veterinarians about how expensive we are, and yet at the same time get mad at us when we don't have any funds to do any diagnostics on your pet, but get mad at us that we can't figure out what's wrong with the pet. And so it's a very difficult field. But then on the last little piece of that puzzle is that you then add in the fact that the vast majority of people that are in the field of veterinary medicine probably aren't really great human people. They're not people people. They're not social people. And I think we all thought that the animals were going to come into our clinic by themselves, and then they come in attached to humans that have to swipe their credit card to pay for it, you know. And it's kind of shocks us all when we get out of veterinary school and we're like, oh my gosh, I have to talk to humans, you know. They have to be the ones that okay the treatment plan that I just went to school for 10 years to learn, you know. But if you don't convince the owner that you are a good veterinarian and that it is worthwhile to spend the money on this pet, they're not going to do it. They're either going to go somewhere else, or they're just going to say, no, I don't trust you, and you know, or then bash you on Google and stuff like that. And so we're, as a veterinary field, we're very ill-equipped to handle those things. And it's one of the reasons I was on the academic admissions committee at the University of Florida for 4 years, and you know, just trying to be part of who gets into the veterinary field. And are you getting into it because you love people? You have to love people. We all love animals, okay? Everybody loves animals. That's a given. But you gotta love the people too. And you have to be willing to walk through the mud with them and hold their hand and explain things. And if you can't do that, you're never gonna gain anybody's trust, and you're never gonna be able to use the knowledge that you go to school for.
I cannot begin to tell you how many professional pet photographers I run into who tell me, oh, I actually don't like people. I just want to work with the dogs.
I just
Like,
want to work with the
well,
dogs. That's right.
who do you think swipes the credit card?
Yeah, that's the world we live in. Until you
Yeah.
get paid with dog kisses, you know, this is just the world you live in. Yeah.
I wish I could pay the mortgage with the dog kisses and gas up the car with puppy breath, but no, it's not possible.
Yeah.
And we have to learn how to deal with people when we're in an animal-related industry, and especially at that end of life phase.
Yeah.
It's so important to know how to approach and manage people because this is such a huge moment of their lives.
Yeah, no, it really is. It is a defining moment of their lives also.
Truly, truly, because my experience will change everything I do for a pet.
Yeah.
You know, and the way I approach Bella's end of life will be completely different because just because I know more now.
Yeah.
I know your time is short, so I'm going to let you go, but I ask you for one last piece of advice for pet guardians when they are approaching their end of life journey.
I would say to bring up the word hospice to your veterinarian. And what that should mean to both of you guys is that you're no longer wanting to do x-rays and radiographs and all this stuff, you know, and ultrasounds, and you're focusing strictly on the comfort of your pet. And we leave that word out far too many times. So bring that word up to them. Say, I just want hospice care. And they may not know what that means, but that's when you can tell them, you know, those words of like, it's just comfort over cure. We're just wanting to keep them comfortable. That's it. So I do think that it's a word that we need to normalize in veterinary medicine, and I'm doing my part to, you know, to make that happen. But I think that that would be very helpful for both the owners, and the veterinarians to, you know, to bring that up and use that philosophy of care a little bit more towards the end. But also, don't be afraid to stand up for what you want. I think that, you know, far too many times a veterinarian might say to somebody like, well, there's nothing more we can do. There's nothing, you know, but go get a second opinion if you want. There are us veterinarians, you know, have personalities just like you do. And if a personality is rubbing you the wrong way or just doesn't make sense, just go talk to somebody else. You know, you will find somebody with a different personality and someone that can share that experience with you a little bit better.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today, Danny. It's been a
You're
pleasure.
welcome. Thank you. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, my experience was awful. I'm sure you can hear it in my voice as I relate it to Danny. I carry that with me as I plan, yes, plan, for the future with Bella. It isn't anything my husband wants to talk about just yet, but, and this is something I've learned from studying under Colleen Ellis at Two Hearts Pet Law Center. It's important to have a plan in place.
Because we don't know if a test result comes back awry tomorrow, or anything could happen. And I want to honor Bella's life with as peaceful and loving an end as possible. I owe it to her. I owe it to Shep. I'm Angela Schneider, owner of Big White Dog Photography in Spokane, Washington, and your host at One Last Network, signing off to go get some Bella snuggles. Listen to One Last Network on whichever podcast platform you prefer. We're on Spotify, Apple, and Amazon. Don't forget to hit follow or subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you have a friend who might be interested in our content, make sure you share us with them. Thanks for listening.